So whether you're pouring your morning cup of coffee right now, or maybe you're overseeing a massive factory, or just sitting by a window watching the rainfall, you are relying on a system that is currently under just immense global pressure.
Oh, absolutely. It's an invisible infrastructure. We all just kind of take it for granted, right?
Right. You turn the tap, you expect the water to be there. But today's deep dive is zeroing in on why that global water supply is facing such a profound stress test, and more importantly, what we can do about it.
Yeah, and the squeeze is coming from multiple directions at once. You've got climate change completely altering historical weather patterns, plus legacy infrastructure that's literally crumbling underground, and then just constantly rising demand from growing populations.
Exactly. Which brings us to our focus today, strategic water planning. We're drawing from some really fascinating research on sustainable water services, specifically looking at South Africa and global trends.
Right, and also some really great insights from a consultancy called Resolve, who specialize in these frameworks.
Yeah, their work is going to serve as our guide today, because our mission here is to unpack how municipalities and industries can shift from just, barely surviving water crises to actually building long-term water resilience.
Because the default operating procedure right now is, frankly, terrifying.
It is. Okay, let's unpack this. Because managing water without a strategic plan is like refusing to change your car's oil and just waiting for the engine to blow up on the highway. It's incredibly stressful and wildly expensive.
That is a perfect way to describe it. In the industry, we call that the run-to-failure model or reactive management.
Right, wait for it to break, then panic.
Exactly. A pipe bursts, a whole neighborhood floods, and then, and only then, a crew is dispatched. Or you wait until a reservoir drops so dangerously low that you're forced to enforce strict rationing.
You aren't managing the network at that point.
No, the failing network is dictating all of your actions. And today, we're going to reveal exactly how we transition from that reactive panic to proactive planning.
But I want to push back on this right away, actually, because, I mean, if the reactive approach is so costly and breaks public trust so badly, why do decision makers still fall into the trap of these patchwork fixes? Is it just human nature to ignore a problem until the tap runs dry?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it's not just about human nature. It's really an infrastructure poverty trap. Strategic planning isn't just a single action, It's a comprehensive roadmap that aligns supply with long-term demand.
But these cities are broke.
Yeah.
Like, they can barely make payroll.
Exactly. And when a municipality is chronically underfunded, their entire budget gets eaten up by the emergency premier.
The emergency premium.
Yeah, think about it. Fixing a massive ruptured water main at 2 in the morning on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah, the overtime pay alone.
Right. The labor, the emergency equipment, the collateral damage, it costs exponentially more than just replacing a stressed pipe during scheduled maintenance. But because they are constantly doing triage, they have no capital left for the long-term roadmap.
Wow. So patchwork fixes look like cost savings, but they're really just digging a deeper hole.
A massive financial and physical hole, and it destroys public trust.
Yeah, I mean, if my community repeatedly faces dry taps, or if I run an industrial park and have to halt the assembly line because the grid failed again,
You lose all confidence in local governance.
completely. And then if the city comes to you later and says, "Hey, we need to raise water tariffs to fix this," you're going to say, "Absolutely not."
Precisely, which is why the first real step away from this mess, what we'd call strategy one, is demand forecasting and resource assessment.
Okay, so figuring out what we actually need before we just start digging holes.
Right. You cannot build a resilient system if your baseline data is basically a wild guess. Planners have to project needs based on highly variable climate scenarios and population growth. They're assessing surface water, groundwater, even rainwater capture potential.
So it's not just, "Oh, the town used 10 million gallons last year. Let's assume they'll use 11 million next year."
No, not at all. Because climate change makes historical data pretty useless in a lot of regions. And on the industrial side, they use these things called decision support models to spot reuse options.
Decision support models.
Yeah.
Break that down for me. How does that actually work on a factory floor?
So it essentially maps every single drop of water entering and exiting a facility. It analyzes the specific chemical or thermal degradation at each step.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so instead of just looking at a big monthly water bill, the model tells the manager, "Hey, the water you need for the cooling towers doesn't actually have to be clean drinking water.
Oh, wow.
Right. It points out that the slightly dirty runoff from the rinsing station can be perfectly redirected to the cooling towers.
So they just reuse it internally. That's incredibly smart. Which leads right into strategy two, right?
Yeah.
Infrastructure optimization.
Exactly. Fixing what we have. Because upgrading your existing system is always cheaper than building a brand new one.
Yeah, and the sources had a statistic that just blew my mind. Improving household and municipal efficiency, like literally just installing better taps and showers, could save over 1 trillion liters of water annually in South Africa alone.
1 trillion liters. It's almost hard to wrap your head around.
So before we go shopping for more water, we really need to plug the holes in our buckets. A trillion liters just slipping down the drain is a staggering amount of water.
It really is. And that balance of supply and demand is what informs realistic targets. That's exactly why efficiency is prioritized way before capacity expansion. I mean, why spend millions on a new desalination plant just to pump that water into a leaky grid?
Right, you're just paying to water the dirt under the street.
Exactly. So municipalities have to stabilize pressure and repair leaks. But of course, even the most perfectly sealed system is vulnerable if your only reservoir dries up.
Right, which means we plug the holes in the bucket, but relying on just one bucket is a really dangerous game.
A very dangerous game. And that brings us to strategy three, diversification of supply.
Mixing it up.
Yeah. A robust plan means mixing dams, boreholes, maybe coastal desalination, stormwater capture, and wastewater recycling.
Treating redundancies.
Exactly. If a drought hits your surface dam, your deep groundwater boreholes can pick up the slack.
And for industries, this diversification strategy leads to what the text calls closed-loop systems.
Yes, those are critical.
Okay, wait, I want to understand this. Because in theory, it sounds great. But how does a massive manufacturing plant endlessly reuse water within a production cycle without it just becoming totally toxic?
It requires some really intensive localized treatment. So instead of discharging wastewater into a local river, the factory basically routes that discharge pipe right back to the beginning of their own line.
But they have to clean it first, obviously.
Right. They put a highly specialized advanced filtration plant right in the middle of the loop. They clean the effluent to the exact specification their machinery needs and just cycle it back through.
So they endlessly reuse the same core volume of water.
Yes, and they only pull a tiny fraction of fresh water from the city just to replace what evaporates. It drastically cuts their withdrawals.
Which is huge because there's so much tension between factories and towns over water. And here's where it gets really interesting. The text mentions strategy four, the one water approach. How does that actually work in practice to stop a massive factory from accidentally draining a local community's drinking supply?
What's fascinating here is that the one water approach legally and structurally treats everyone, the towns, the factories, the farms, and the ecosystems, as interconnected nodes in a single system.
Rather than just isolated consumers who don't talk to each other.
Exactly. Because traditionally, water management is heavily siloed. The agricultural lobby does its own thing. The mayor does their own thing. The factory gets its own permit. But they are all physically pulling from the exact same aquifer.
It's like a family sharing a single joint bank account, but everyone has their own debit card and nobody's checking the ledger.
That is exactly what it is. And eventually, someone triggers a massive overdraft. The one water approach forces coordinated planning.
How so?
Well, a centralized body looks at the whole basin's yield. They might mandate that a factory's slightly treated wastewater be sent straight to the local farmers for irrigation instead of dumping it.
Oh, wow. So one sector's waste actually becomes another sector's supply.
Yes, but you can only do that if everyone is working off the same ledger. It prevents those systemic overdrafts.
But getting all those different groups to play nicely together sounds incredibly difficult. Which brings us to the human element. Strategy five.
The most unpredictable variable of all.
Right. Because you can engineer the perfect closed loop system. You can map the groundwater perfectly. But if the people living there aren't on board, the entire plan collapses.
Completely. And that's why community and stakeholder engagement is the final crucial pillar. Residents absolutely have to be part of water saving campaigns and the actual decision making process.
Yeah, the sources talk a lot about industries needing a social license to operate.
Right. And that's not just a piece of paper you get from the zoning board. It's the ongoing informal approval from the local community.
So it's not just, you know, a PR campaign where a factory sponsors a local Little League team and hopes nobody notices the river drying up.
No, not at all. It requires real partnership. A big industrial player has to actively prove that their water strategy is protecting the local supply. They might have to co-invest in the town's aging infrastructure or open up their water data to the public.
Building actual trust.
Yes. And groups like Resolve, the consultancy we mentioned earlier, they are the ones who often guide municipalities and industries through this. They act like the architects or mediators, helping turn these really tense, difficult challenges into sustainable opportunities.
They're the ones trying to get everyone to agree on how to balance that joint bank account.
Exactly. And the benefits are just massive. For households, it means continuous, safe water. For industries, it means way less downtime and lower costs. And for the environment, it builds resilience against extreme weather like floods and droughts and protects our river ecosystems.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener, sitting at home or running your business?
Well, it means that strategic water planning transforms water from being this major source of panic and stress into a really stable platform for economic growth. It's not an optional upgrade anymore. It's really essential for survival.
It's a total mindset shift. So, to recap the journey of our deep dive today, we saw how crucial it is to shift from that reactive, run-to-failure panic into a proactive, integrated one-water approach.
Definitely.
We have to forecast our needs, optimize the pipes we already have, diversify our supply so we aren't relying on a single dam, and, genuinely engage our communities. Those are the tools that secure our water future.
They are. And, if municipalities and industries really fully embrace these closed-loop, completely integrated systems, we have to wonder, will we soon reach a point in our lifetime where the very concept of wastewater is erased from the dictionary? Because every single drop is viewed as an infinitely renewable resource.
Wow, now that is a thought. Just erasing the idea of wastewater entirely. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Let that idea percolate the next time you turn on the tap.